Green Visions on KUMD is a KUMD feature to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. Christmas Eve, a federal lawsuit was filed by the White Earth and Red Lake Nations, along with the Sierra Club and Honor the Earth, on a key water quality permit granted by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to Line 3 that allows Enbridge to discharge dredged and fill materials into rivers and streams. Joining us this morning on the phone, Joe Plummer from the Red Lake Nation and Frank Bebo, the in-house lawyer for the White Earth Tribe, join us to give us some additional details, let us know what has been happening since then. Gentlemen, good morning. It's so good to have you with us this morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about the lawsuit. Various means, ways and means to stop Enbridge have been filed and refiled repeatedly, and the project does seem to kind of steamroller on. Where are we now?
Well, first, you know, it is a steamroller, but the steamroller has been slowed down. It's taken several years for them to actually get some of the environmental issues addressed properly. But the steamroller that you're talking about is why we're having to sue the Corps of Engineers, because they didn't do an environmental impact statement. They're not following NEPA. They're relying on the state of Minnesota and the Pollution Control Agency that had their evidentiary hearings. They didn't want to talk about our tribal issues very much. And then they didn't do an EIS either. They're relying and piggybacking on the Public Utilities Commission that the ALJ did a pretty good environmental impact statement. But unfortunately, the PUC said, you know, we're not going to really look at what the tribal and treaty rights are because it'll, you know, be, I guess, too hard for them. And so we have a complete weak system that's, you know, relying on the weak link all the way down. And so the Corps of Engineers is the one who is supposed to be watching out for our best interest through their trust responsibility.
We have had a number of conversations with Winona LaDuc, the executive director of Honor the Earth, on this program. And Winona obviously is very passionate about this project. Enbridge put shovels in the ground the absolute moment that they were legally allowed. Water protectors have been right there on the site protesting. Winona had hoped that the governor would perhaps enact a stay until a few more of these issues could be dealt with. Her sense is that it was kind of trying to run everything through, push it through during a pandemic. What is your sense of that?
You know, that's the bottom line reason why we're having to go to federal court, because the state system doesn't provide for automatically to have a stay of construction or something to that effect. We went to the PUC twice, and we asked them for a stay, and they said no. They said that the 4,200 jobs were more essential than the lives during a pandemic at Red Lake and White Earth and anybody else along the route that's more important than climate change and protecting our fresh waters. I think Enbridge just wants to get the pipeline through our area. The problem is it leaves us, the tribes and everybody else who lives here, with the ongoing continuous exponential degradation of our fresh water and natural resources. And that's, you know, inextricably linked to all of our spirituality and cultural beliefs. And this is all just for tar sands oil up in Canada to get to someplace else on the planet. This is not even a trade. Mm-hmm. This is worse than our original trade, you know, at New York and Staten Island or whatever.
Talk a little bit about these jobs. Are the people that are being hired, the people that are working on the pipeline, are they local mm-hmm. people?
A few of them are. Most of the skilled pipe fitters come from Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma. So they're mostly out-of-state people. But there's one thing I wanted to clarify. There's actually three different appeals that are presently pending pertaining to this Line 3 pipeline. One of them is what you started off with, and that's the appeal in the District of Columbia district challenging the Army Corps' grant of permits under the Clean Water Act, but there's two pending here in Minnesota. One of them is challenging the Public Utilities Commission's substantive decisions, and a second one in state appellate court is challenging the Pollution Control Agency's decision to issue different water crossing permits under the Clean Water Act. And because all of the, first off, what's very important, you know, for the listeners is that the most important reason why we're fighting this so hard is 50% of this this new Line 3 route is a brand new greenfield route. There's no pipelines from Park Rapids all the way over to Fond du Lac. That's about 50% of this new pipeline corridor that Enbridge has been hoping to open up for the past 7-8 years now. And we've been involved against Enbridge's efforts, first with the Sandpiper to establish this new corridor, and now, you know, with Line 3, because once the Sandpiper, you know, was kind of sidelined, then Enbridge dusted off this old application to get Line 3 relocated. Lo and behold, through this same brand new corridor that they've been trying to open up for the past 7-8 years. And eventually they're going to relocate the other pipelines of the Enbridge main line, which currently go parallel Highway 2 through the whole Leech Lake Reservation. They want to relocate those. There's 6 pipelines in that Enbridge mainline corridor. And Enbridge's goal is to relocate them one by one down to this new corridor that they've succeeded in opening up. And they literally have 5 different crews going along this new route at different locations so they can get it constructed, like, very quickly, you know, before any of these motions for stay are considered.
Let's talk just briefly. Again, one of the concerns was people coming in and the potential problems with man camps, concern about violence to Native women, concerns now about COVID. I understand that you gentlemen got a Vimeo recording of an Aiken City Council meeting. Tell us about that.
Yes, one of the people that works at Honor the Earth had sent a link for the Vimeo, I think it's like V-E-M-E-O video of the board meeting for Aiken County. And partway through, they were talking about the COVID cases in Aiken County. And I believe the number was somewhere close to 75 or 100 cases or whatever it was. But then they said like 16 of them were directly related to Enbridge workers. And so, you know, you're talking about a significant number of people being called essential so that they can come and live in our community, even though they've come from the other places that Joe described. And they come up here and they're just mixing in and blending to some degree at our what few restaurants we have. We know that all the hospitals are basically filled up, all the ICUs are filled up with COVID cases. And so what does that mean when you just import people who are into an area where a lot of seniors live with, you know, already pre-existing conditions? Are we supposed to just stay in home more and hope they don't hurt our environment as they come through for their own, you know, economic purposes?
And seniors, I guess, speaking as a person who's related to a senior, it's so easy to say, well, they just need to stay at home. These people have been home. They've been home for almost a year, not going anywhere, not seeing anyone. They've been doing their part already. And it seems like it's perhaps time for the rest of us to step up and maybe try to give them a break or something. Enbridge says that this is a maintenance-driven project. You talked about this new line that they want to put in. Of course, it's been presented to the public. No, the old line is all falling apart, and it's going to leak, and it's going to be a problem, and we just have to get in there and fix it and put in, you know, replace, you know, the line so that it doesn't create an issue. And yet it sounds like it's not just replacing the old line. And one of the other things, of course, that Winona has also been very outspoken about on this program is the idea that this is not the time, that it doesn't really make sense to sink a lot of money into infrastructure for fossil fuels. What's your sense of that?
Well, I could start on that, Frank, if you don't mind.
Please do.
Okay. Well, the misinformation campaign that Enbridge has been flooding us with for the past 2 years makes it sound like Line 3 is the only pipeline they have running through Minnesota. As I indicated earlier, they have literally six pipelines that run through the Enbridge Mainline. That's what they call it, the Enbridge Mainline Corridor. Those six pipelines together, and Line 3 is one of them, those six pipelines together transport 2.8 million barrels per day, every day, through Minnesota. You know, and off to the global market. Line 3 is one of those. The total needs for the two refineries in Minnesota are 400,000 barrels per day. That's when they're going at 100%. So that leaves an excess of 2.4 million barrels per day that Enbridge today ships through Minnesota into the global market. Why should we accept all the risk and the Canadian company gets all the benefit?
One of the other things that we've seen that I guess I found very disturbing as I was kind of following this on social media is where some of the water protectors, many of whom are seniors, many of whom are elders, ended up basically stopping some of the construction equipment and saying, no, this is a sacred area here. This is a place where we pray. We're not leaving. You're not going any further. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I'll talk about that a little bit. I grew up in the South in the 60s, so I've seen racism in a black and white world. And, you know, it's not as obvious out here sometimes. And when we are participating and trying to explain how our cultural and spiritual beliefs are, people seem to think that we're talking about in the past. It's hard for some people to imagine that we're alive and practicing our cultural beliefs and spirituality in 2021. And so a lodge was put up in a place that wasn't marked at all. And as a result, it was said to be within the boundaries. Someone came out and put a marking stake right in the center of the lodge, even though they understood most likely that it was something put up by some tribal member, as you know, for some spiritual purpose. And the DNR came out and has been citing people. They cited Winona LaDuke. You know, the other water protectors are standing up for this, but at the same time, it's confusing for Enbridge. Also, at the same time, this reminds me of some of the spearing rallies back in the 80s in Wisconsin, because even though Enbridge doesn't have its cultural team out there to check things out and figure out what's really happening on the ground, what is happening is that the state, through the DNR and through the police, they do understand that we do have other rights under the American Indian Religious Freedoms Act, and that that is a spiritual place. And so they are actually escorting or have allowed a path for people to go back and practice their spirituality there. And so there are people who understand what our treaty rights and our rights to exist and everything else really mean, and they're more on the federal level and the law enforcement level. The people who are trying to take advantage of us from Canada, this Enbridge Corporation, they don't care at all, and they are going headstrong and just trying to ram us through, like you were describing in the beginning. And so they don't care about those things that are important to us, whether it's the water, whether it's the resources, whether it's the spirituality. They don't care.
Will you be able... please go ahead, Joe.
Okay. Enbridge took the lead, you know, for this cultural training along the new corridor and having tribal monitors from the beginning. So they were trying to control that whole mechanism, too. And what the monitors were primarily trained to look out for were archaeological sites, you know, which are important, but which the monitors were, it was totally overlooked on them, is that it's the Anishinaabe is an existing culture right now, and cultural practices and cultural properties that exist along this route because they all tie together into a singular natural world, were completely overlooked for good reason. One, so Enbridge could check the box, you know, that they were appropriately training the cultural monitors, but two, so they could keep them within those boundaries, very narrow boundaries, and not look at the other federally protected native rights of existing cultural practices.
So the question becomes, can you stop this effort? And even if you are able to stop it, has too much damage been done?
I believe we will be able to stop it, number one. I believe that all along. And that's what I believed in the beginning when we were fighting Sandpiper. And when Enbridge found out that they had to do an environmental impact statement, they cut and run. And they went and took their money and invested in Dakota Access. And they were part of DAPL. They put 27% in investment in there. And that was back in, I think, August or whatever of 2016. And then a month later, they were bulldozing all the cultural sites and putting in the pipe. So, you know, that's the picture that we're looking at. But we know we can stop them because we've learned from DAPL and we've learned from KXL. And we understand, you know, by participating and exercising our rights, that we are ultimately going to prevail because they aren't following the law. It doesn't matter if it's the state actors. It doesn't matter if it's Enbridge. They're afraid. Everyone's afraid right now. They don't know what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do is to not do anything if you don't know what the right thing is. You don't go forward and guess. And that's the problem that's going on here. All of this can be suspended. It's been, like Joe said, 6, 7, 8 years. It's no hurry. It's not irreparable harm. They're still able to put the pipeline in. All they have to do is wait and see if they actually get it approved. And by that time, I think all of our energy and everything else is going to change. And that's what Winona talks about with stranded assets. There are more jobs right now in solar and wind energy than anything in oil. And all the oil that we may need to use in the future is already being extracted. It's available, and the pipelines exist. They don't need anything else. And when Joe talks about 6 pipelines along Highway 2 there from Duluth going out to Clearbrook and on up, I live in Ball Club. There's 6 of those pipelines. One of those pipelines is a 20-inch pipeline that Enbridge said that they needed to put this, what they call a diluent, to thin out the tar sands to pump it through the pipeline back down to Duluth. But what they found out one way or another is that they don't need to do that, and that 20-inch pipe is also available for reversing the pumps. And they could be using that to transport from the same exact place to the place down in Superior. But they don't want to talk about that, even though, as I understand it, they're applying for permits for that same line in Wisconsin and further downstream. So they don't want to talk about it. We have a petition in there for them to explain, haven't you already made all the changes and all of your system upgrades to equal what you're asking for line 3? The PUC hasn't even set up a meeting or a hearing for that yet, because if they start looking at that puzzle, then do you really need it? And that's what Joe was explaining.
So
another thing that I think is important for the listeners is the Minnesota Court of Appeals has already rejected this new proposed corridor from Park Rapids east to Fond du Lac 2 times. Once, back in 2016, Frank mentioned the Sandpiper. The Sandpiper was a pipeline that Enbridge designed to run from the Bakken crude in North Dakota straight across east, right through this exact same new corridor. And that was rejected because at that time, the Public Utilities Commission decided that an environmental impact statement was not necessary for this large new energy project through a greenfield corridor with no pipelines. Well, the Court of Appeals took a look at that and said, well, geez, that's a no-brainer. Of course you need an EIS for that, an environmental impact statement. And then what Frank mentioned, that they cut and run, the next day, as soon as that Court of Appeals decision came down, you know, which threw a cold bucket of water on Enbridge's plans for this new corridor, they withdrew their permits to the Public Utilities Commission to locate the Sandpiper there, and instead bought into that Dakota Access Pipeline. And they've been pumping, you know, the Bakken crude through Dakota Access ever since. Then, most recently, as part of the Line 3 permits for this exact same corridor, the environmental impact statement that was put together. It was many volumes, but it was a lot of boilerplate, not a lot of meaningful things when it came to the important issues. And one of the important issues that was completely overlooked in the environmental impact statement for the Line 3 was the impacts of a spill into the Lake Superior water basin. Well, the Department of Commerce, you know, went and commissioned spill modeling to see what would happen, you know, if a pipeline broke in the Lake Superior watershed. Well, you know, a reasonable person would think you do that spill modeling close to Lake Superior, since that's where the Enbridge main line goes. But what did they do? They went 35 miles west of Lake Superior, you know, where it would be much less of an impact. And that decision on whether or not the EIS was adequate because of that spill modeling is one of the issues that's also before the Court of Appeals right now. And since the Court of Appeals has already rejected on related grounds this exact same corridor, we think that this spill modeling issue, which is one of three that's before the Court of Appeals, is something that they're going to pay attention to.
How soon will you find out how soon will somebody make a decision about whether the project goes ahead or needs to stop?
Well, the first decision by the Court of Appeals is whether or not to, and this is an expedited motion, to stay the construction pending the consideration of the substantive issues that have been waiting before the Court of Appeals. We expect a decision on that expedited motion in the Minnesota Court of Appeals within, I'm going to say, 3 weeks. Maybe I'm a little optimistic.
Well, gentlemen, I hope we have the opportunity to have you back on the program and talk about this more in the future. Thank you so much, both of you, for taking time out from your day and offering some additional information to our listening audience. We really appreciate it.
You're great, Jay. Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Right. Okay.
Joining us this morning, Joe Plummer from the Red Lake Nation and Frank Bebo, the in-house lawyer for the White Earth Tribe, joined us this morning as our guests on Green Visions. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible with support from Heritage Window and Door, the Duluth Superior supplier for renewal by Anderson Windows and Doors, and from the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.